Welcome one and all once again to Dual Wielding episode 156. We are coming to you on this glorious Super Smash Mortal Shadows weekend. Joining me this week we have Martin.
Hello.
And we have Daniel.
Hi.
And we have Earl, because apparently I never actually say my name at the start of these things. So it is whatever.
Doesn't matter.
He's not that important.
He's only hosting, so whatever.
But, yeah, so it was a big week for gaming. I think the biggest, probably this year, we had the release of Super Smash Bros. For the Nintendo 3DS, which is the actual full title, not just me being pretentious, Shadow of Mordor, and I guess Frozen 2? Or Frozen Horizon?
Frozen 2.
Okay.
Horizon 2, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, that's pretty, I mean, you have two major exclusives, and what a lot of people are calling this year's Arkham Asylum, both in terms of how it plays and in terms of coming out of nowhere for people to be excited for. And I guess we'll kick it off there, since it's the actual only new game that any of us have picked up this week. So, Martin?
That's right. Yeah, I played this game. And I actually also finished it today. So, Shadow of Mordor. It's pretty awesome. It's the game Assassin's Creed would like to be, because it's mostly just focused on the fighting and the actually assassinating of people, and doesn't have, it does have side missions, but they are not this boring, hey, maybe you want to collect some mail? Or hey, how about you walk around and listen to this guy for 10 minutes? So, that part is great. And the other part is that the combat is actually competent, because it's basically like in the Arkham games. With, of course, a couple of tweaks here and there with having multiple different special abilities and of course how these special abilities can possibly also connect with the Nemesis system. And that's the other good news, that the Nemesis system does indeed really work well. In fact, when I started playing, I did a couple of story missions to unlock a couple of skills, and then for probably 3 or 4 hours, I did nothing but fuck around with the orc hierarchy and trying to strengthen some guys so I can then later maybe kill them and get more experience that way, or make them fight each other to create power struggles and stuff like that, and all that is really, really fun. It's also, despite being immortal, I think it's actually kind of a really good-looking game, I think. Especially the character models look really nice, even like during gameplay. It's not just in cutscene stuff, the orcs and stuff. They animate well, they look so nice. I mean, in a disgusting way, they look nice, but it's really cool.
Yeah, as well as orcs can look. Do they look like the movie orcs, or are they a different, because I know it takes place,
it's a mixture, I would say, like movie and what the books describe, I would say. Yeah. I mean, it's set between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and it's not directly referencing movie stuff, but some designs are obviously movie-inspired, like how Sauron looks in this is exactly like how he looks in the movies, or how Gollum looks is exactly how he looks in the movies, but all the other stuff is either made up or like a mixture of the styles, I would say. Also, what I really enjoy is all the orc shatter. It's kind of awesome. I mean, either when you meet a war chief, everyone has something to say because they all have their own personality. I have also not seen any personality repeated, which is nice, and I played this game for 20 hours, I think it said at the end. They also do a really cool thing that even the orcs that don't matter, like the cannon fodder, not the captains and the war chiefs and stuff, even they, when you walk around the world, you can hear about stuff that you actually did or something, or just generally then talking about you like you are some kind of legend or some weird stuff is kind of awesome.
So it's like the Batman games where like you can go, you hear random criminals talking about how Batman took down this person or that person.
Yeah, stuff like that, but it's a bit more dynamic in this game since it all ties into the Nemesis system. Like I said, for example, if I get killed during a fight by some lowly orc, he then gets promoted to be a captain. And he will remember that he killed you and got promoted to a captain, because the next time you encounter him, he will probably rub it under your nose.
So is there a system for death in here, or do they just assume you die and come back all the time?
It's based on the lore. You are a grave walker because you've been hit by a blood curse, so that's why you can't actually die.
Okay. And yeah. Do you die often? Do people kick your ass that much?
I would say in the first half, the game is actually... I mean, even later on, it's not an easy game. I died quite a lot early on, I have to say, because you don't have a lot of abilities and stuff, so some of the orcs are just... I mean, the captains are just way too hard for you to deal with, or when you get, like, overpowered in a stronghold... later on, you get some abilities that let you deal more easily with big waves of orcs, but early on, it's really hard, so I died quite a bit, and that, of course, resulted in some orcs getting quite strong. I actually had one guy killed me so often that he actually became stronger than all of the war chiefs, but I worked my way up to him, and it was very satisfying killing him in the end. My only real gripe with this game is that they lock a lot of the skills that you can get behind story missions. And
so it's not an RPG in that sense where you can like upgrade, like you it rolls out.
Yeah, it is like an RPG and it's not. I mean, you have the skill tree and the skill tree is tiered. You have basically two kind of experience bars. You have a power bar and an experience points bar. If you fill the experience points bar up, you get 1 point put into a skill. But you also need to level up your power. That gets you always to the next tier in opens then up in the skill tree. And both of these things you can theoretically do by just fucking around in the open world, even the power thing. There are power struggles between the orcs, for example. An orc wants to show off his power by fighting with the Karagor, and then you can... you see the scene, him fighting in front of his guys with the Karagor, and then you can basically decide, like, do you want to ambush this guy in this situation? Then if you kill him, you get extra power. Or you can actually help him kill that Karagor for him without him even noticing, possibly. And you also get that bonus power, but you also make that orc stronger. Which can also be helpful in certain situations, depending on what you plan to do within the Nemesis system. Because later on, when you, for example, get the... power to dominate orcs, then you can basically take them under your control and then send them on kill missions and stuff like that. So at that point, it makes maybe sense to strengthen a guy like that and then let him take out people you don't want to deal with.
So it sounds like that they've taken a very intelligent approach to the hierarchy system, in the sense that they make it so that there are people that you... there are orcs that you want to get higher in order to get yourself an advantage later on down the line. And I really like that. And the fact that they obviously say, look, you're going to die, it's going to happen. Yeah. And, you know, and the thing I think from watching the videos is you can tell that they took Assassin's Creed and they were like, let's make this but actually focus on the combat, because that's not what Ubisoft is doing. They just seem to be making the world bigger every time. And I think that's what Assassin's
Creed... And Ubi, at this point, is also not really focusing on the assassination things. Yeah. To do so much other things than assassinating people.
For a game about assassins, you don't do a whole lot of combat or assassination.
Yeah, exactly. And that's entirely different, this game. And also, stealth just works way better in this game than it does in the Assassin's Creed games. Or it's really well done. They also just gives you really cool abilities to stay in stealth, like the Shadow Strike, when you can like aim with your bow at, in the distance, like at an orc that's possibly hundreds of feet away, and then you teleport to him and decapitate him just because you shot at him. Cool. And that's a stealth move. That's totally awesome. You can totally use that to get around the strongholds from roof to roof without even climbing and stuff like that. It's pretty awesome. But back to the skills thing that I had a problem with. But some skills within this, like the domination of orcs, is locked behind story content. So what I actually wanted to do for a while was just fucking around with the Nemesis system, but I couldn't do some stuff because I had to do story missions to get specific skills. And the domination skill, they only unlock within like the last 5 story missions of the game.
That sucks.
Which I think is kind of a shame, because that skill is a lot of fun and lets you do a lot of crazy stuff within the Nemesis system. I would have preferred it if they made the system entirely open and just let me pick whatever I want. But I think their idea was, yeah, we will give you this in a story mission, that way we can teach you how this works, and at the same time we can design an interesting mission around it. Which is okay, I guess, but they could have done it I think, in the same way they did it in with the side stuff, that if you don't have that skill unlocked yet, you can't do the story mission yet. Or just give you the skill for the story mission, then later on you can decide if you want to unlock it or not.
Well, I mean, if
also
you're gonna,
be a solution.
If you're going to go by... Like, if you're going to give somebody a new ability and then use a story mission to teach them, that's fine. But don't backload them into the last set of story missions, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I would have said, like, if you want to do this, like, by half of the story mission, I would have wished they had gave me all the story unlocks, basically. So then I could have focused on all the stuff I actually just wanted to do. And the story is fine. It's nothing, like, super special, but I also think they don't have much liberties from what I've heard about the Tolkien estate. They're very strict about what they allow, so I guess they did as much as they could do. And
it's also in an odd position being in between, because it's between The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy, right?
Yeah.
So there's only so much wiggle room you can have, but they were smart to just kind of place it outside of that whole vacuum in general, since it has nothing to do with any of those characters or their relatives.
Yeah. But like I said, it's not a big deal, since you can have so much fun in this with just fucking around with the orcs. Like, just for fun, I thought, like, wouldn't it be great if all the 5 war chiefs in this region would be dominated by me? So what I did was I dominated all the bodyguards of the war chiefs that were in Chartra at that point. And then I assassinated all these war chiefs and basically got my own people into positions of power.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And awesome.
Martin's already knew what it means to be an American.
And the real fun thing is, you can also have the power, once you dominate people, you also can just, if you're in the region, you see these guys around, you can just push down on the D-pad and make the heads explode. Nice. So one of the trophies was actually was kind of funny. I saw that you had to create a power vacuum of basically killing all the war chiefs without them giving time for someone else to take the helm as a war chief, because you can actually pass time and then the orcs will do some infighting and stuff like that, or new orcs will come up. So, when I saw that, it was like, hey, I already have 5 guys in power that I control, so I just go to them and make their heads explode. And yeah, then I created a nice little power vacuum, and then it was fun to see how guys were then fighting to go to the top of the chain, basically. It was pretty funny. Yeah, also, since you mentioned Batman a couple of times, and me as well, it's really obvious that this game at some point was not a Lord of the Rings game, and I also heard that it definitely wasn't a Lord of the Rings game at some point. And I'm pretty sure it definitely was supposed to be a Batman game.
It's almost a shame that they didn't get Monolith to make Arkham Origins, then maybe it wouldn't have been a piece of crap.
Yeah,
I like Arkham Origins, but
from the gameplay systems, with the fighting to some of the stealth abilities, like I mentioned the Shadow Strike, right? With the distance skill, I could totally see this being from a Batman game, just with a grappling hood, and instead of decapitating the dude, you would just punch him out. And the whole Nemesis system could be just mobsters in Gotham City.
I was
going
to say, it reminds me, I don't know if you ever read this story, I think War Games, where Batman tries to, he had a contingency plan where he would control all of the mobsters and mafia in Gotham,
yeah,
and Batgirl. Yeah, that basically what it sounds like when you put it that way.
Yeah, so I really think at one point it was supposed to be a Batman game, but then I don't know if WB had to change the thought or something, and they thought, let's make something with Lord of the Rings. I don't know. It works out in the end. It's not like it's a bad thing or anything, but it's just
yeah, and
kind of
it
fun.
Gives them some diversity, because I like the Arkham games, but it's nice to have something that's not Batman skinned within this. You know, like we've talked about, a lot of people try to copy this engine before and they fail horribly because they don't understand why it works.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that there's a competent thing in the universe that's different, completely different.
Yeah, they at least figured out how the combat system has to work. It works exactly like it should be.
They do
their own twists, and in the end have something really unique combined with the Nemesis system. Also, the nice thing is the game actually has an end, so the ending isn't like... It leaves possibilities for a sequel, but it's not like, I feel like this isn't really an end, like with a lot of games these days. This was a story which beginning, middle, and end, and that's really nice.
I wouldn't be too surprised if somebody at Monolith gave somebody at Rocksteady a ring and asked them how the system in Batman works.
I mean,
oh,
it
yeah,
makes sense if you're both Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe they had some creative exchange with this stuff. I wouldn't doubt it.
And let's be honest, based on Batman, I assume that engine gets around a lot because there's a lot of hands in that pie.
Yeah.
With the
and Monolith is the best studio that WB have. So,
well, I would say Rocksteady's up there.
Well, yeah, but Monolith has a long history of making some very, very good games.
Oh, yeah, sure. But they have not for a while, and so...
Yeah, I guess so.
Which was why I was skeptical about this title before. And like I said, I was never sure if this Nemesis system is actually going to work in the end. Because you see something like this, like that during a presentation stuff. Well, we all know how you can fake stuff during a vertical slice, right? And but this actually works, and it's really cool and fun. And I personally do hope they get the chance to maybe do a sequel, or I don't care, for all I care they can do a different game which just includes this Nemesis thing and maybe even expand further upon it, because that's a really cool thing in an open world game. And actually, I'm usually not the guy who likes to just do shenanigans in an open world, because most of the time it's not interesting to me to wreak chaos, but this is not chaos, right? You can do whatever you want, like, but there is still some kind of structure, but you still have, control about what is going to happen, or at least some control over it, and it still connects with basically randomly generated missions with this whole power struggle thing, which can happen, or when orcs start to fight each other and stuff like that, which is really cool, I think.
Does it have any karaoke?
No karaoke.
It's a bad game. 0/10. Not buying it. See ya.
All the side mission stuff is just, hey, how about you hunt these things? How about you collect these herbs? And you get special missions for each of your weapons. So you basically get like special bow missions in which you have to, for example, kill orcs from very short distance with your bow. Basically, close quarters combat with a bow. You get stealth missions in which you have to not be detected and stuff like that. Yeah, but both are all, like I said, optional. But actually fun, because there are challenges. Challenges in which you use the gameplay systems you have learned during your normal playtime. You just take it further.
Sounds like a cool game. I'll pick it up when I have money, maybe.
Yeah, it's on my to get when it's cheap or when there's a big sale. It's not that I have anything against it. It's just that there's a few games I want to pick up.
Yeah.
Also, you shouldn't get the last gen version because, from what we heard, it doesn't have the Nemesis system.
Yeah, and if you're gonna have like
this game without the Nemesis system, I would not be as much in love.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the game is the Nemesis system, because it's an interesting thing.
I also feel like hiding it a month and a half after the original release is probably telling as well.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Daniel? Have you been playing anything new?
I haven't been playing anything new, sadly. I will do in a couple of weeks' time, because I have the pre-sequel pre-ordered, but not until then.
Is that out this week?
It's out on the 14th.
Oh,
was
okay.
It out on the 14th?
Borderlands the pre-sequel.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
So I will have impressions then, but not until then, sadly, because.
Oh.
Okay. Yes, that seems like a game that's really just kind of being pushed out there. Like, it doesn't seem to have the typical 2K push behind it like the second one did.
Well, it's just like, hey guys, just remember this is a thing, because we've got loads of interesting stuff coming out on current generation, otherwise.
It's weird, though, since 2K doesn't have something else to promote, right?
They do.
They have their sports game.
And sports games, yeah.
Civ and WWE.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, technically speaking, 2K doesn't have to do that, because WWE, when they want to, whore themselves out for their products, as they already started, but we won't get into that. I haven't really been playing anything that I haven't updated you folks on. I will share my shame. I have reached level 635 in Candy Crush Saga.
Bloody hell.
You can see it, but I'm shaking my head.
There are 635 levels in that game?
Well, I'm at the end of my current game. I think if I update it, I'll get another 50 levels or so. But I'm thinking that maybe this is the end of the road for me in Candy Crush. If I don't update it, I don't have to feel bad, because I've reached the end of the road, as it were. I will just say this much. I am happy with myself that I've gotten that far and I have not spent a dime on that game. Just out of patience and out of wasted time.
I'm still shaking my head.
Oh, so am I. When I reach it, I'm like, what have I done with my life that I'm this far in Candy Crush Saga now? And why do I still have it on my phone? But like I said, it's a great time waster when I have like 5 minutes waiting for the train or the bus or something to pick up and play.
I usually play Freeze in moments like that.
What's Freeze?
Threes.
Oh, threes. Yeah. Yes, I had that too, but I don't know why. I think because Candy Crush has a progression system, like you beat it up when you go on. It's that hook that
the
old school.
Progression and Freeze for me is getting better at it because
I'm really terrible at it. Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's a thing, and I'm sure my top score in Threes is terrible. But I mean, with Candy Crush, there is, you know, like, okay, I beat level 63. I'm on level 64. I beat level 6. That's something that's easy to track, and it's something that works because you can also see what levels your friends are on. There are actually people further ahead than I am. I don't know what they do, but yeah. I think that's our yearly updates on mobile games. So let's move on to news. And if we're going to talk about really depressing video game news and depressing games I'm playing, we might as well talk about video game movies. This week had three, I'm going to use quotes, major announcements. The first one was that they are doing a Tetris movie.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this... I read somewhere that this was the same studio that did that awful food fight film. Is there any truth to that? There was a... Oh, you obviously don't watch John Thomas videos. Well, there was a film called Foo Fight that was released a couple of years back, and it was really bad. It was a really bad animated film.
Yeah, it's a studio who does... What is the best way to say this without being condescending? They basically do amusement ride videos.
Oh, yeah, it is the same studio then. This will be interesting.
Yes. They do, like, the little videos that play when you're, like, in the line for amusement parks. Like, they've done a couple for DC and Marvel. And, yeah, okay, their films are Food Fight, Lego, The Adventures of Clutch Powers, Bionicle, The Legend Reborn, and Heroes Factory, Rise of the Rookie. I'm almost certain that all of those are direct-to-video. So, that tells you something. And I think... More than anything, the idea of a Tetris film is stupid, but I think what really kind of set off alarms in my head.
The thing is, I've heard about people trying to make a Tetris film for a while, and now it's actually happening, and I'm still
the same director as Food Fight as well. Jesus Christ!
I'm still flabbergasted by it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... I'm
especially
sure
reading the quotes. We should read some of those quotes.
That's what I was going to get into. This is what, it's a terrible idea in general, but this is what really set off the alarms in my head. To quote the actual president of Threshold Entertainment, who's the company making it, it's a very big, epic, sci-fi movie. None of those words. None of those words. Describe Tetris. I would never use any of those words to describe Tetris.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't use the word movie to describe Tetris either. So you know.
I said any of those words.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a.
Yeah.
You'd get away with that. But big, very big, epic, sci-fi. None of those come to mind when I think Tetris. And then he continues. This isn't a movie with a bunch of lines running around the page. We're not giving feet to the geometric shapes.
Oh, thank God!
So it's going to make even less sense then.
I would have a morbid curiosity if they did make a movie given a Tetris piece. What did they call it? Tetramos?
Tetronimos.
If they actually did give them feet and had them kind of going on an adventure, I would probably be kind of curious about that. But making it a big, epic, generic sci-fi film is kind of what hurt Battleship. And that Battleship didn't have a ton to go on either. But Battleship wasn't an alien invasion game ever. So, I don't even know what you, like honestly, the only thing this has is the brand. I don't know what you would take from Tetris.
Well, there isn't really anything about Tetris. That's the point. It's like, because Tetris is a very abstract concept when you think about it. Like, the blocks fall, you can't control what blocks you get. You just spin them around until they make lines.
There is no theme to Tetris.
There's no theme to it. There's no, like, you can't apply any kind of narrative to it.
It's an abstract.
Yeah.
I would go with Space Invaders. I can kind of understand Breakout or whatever that brick breaking game is. But Tetris, you don't even technically have direct control over anything. You just kind of move the pieces as they're falling down. So it's so weird.
Also, I want to read the Kasanov quote that I also love. Should the film take off, Kasanov has big plans for the Tetris property. We certainly have the canvas for location-based entertainment based on the epicness, he said.
Oh, God.
What you will see in Tetris is the teeny-tiny tip of an iceberg that has intergalactic significance.
Tetris, what? The Star Wars for a new generation.
I hope Alexei Patyanov is happy with himself, because he's enabled this to happen.
I bet the people at the Tetris company are just rubbing their hands. We got away with this.
I was about to say, it's not like the Tetris company hasn't hard out their brands before. There's what, Nintendo Tetris, there is the Puyo Puyo Tetris, there is... I mean, Tetris is on everything. You can play Tetris.
Actually, there is a Tetris board game as well.
See, even then, I kind of get that, but It's weird. Like, I always find it weird when they make board games out of something. Like, there's an Angry Birds board game. I think there's a Cut the Rope board game.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's Cut the Rope and Angry Birds don't really work as board games because the physics is not based off a realistic model.
Also Christy with a board game.
Yeah, it's like people are like, oh man, these brands are hot, what can we do with them? We make board games, we make movies, it's kind of get tied up with them. And
the Angry Birds movie makes sense, because...
Well, I was going to say Grain to Dad, but...
Yeah.
Well, at least they are characters, and they are in some kind of conflict with each other.
Yeah, but even then, their conflict is to throw themselves at those people. It's not much of a huge...
Oh yeah, but you could stretch that, like...
Well, you're going to
have to. I can at least see stretching that, but...
You have to stretch that so thin.
I don't have huge hope for the Angry Birds movie.
It's got Peter Dinklage in it, so...
I'm not going to say that the Angry Birds film is going to be some kind of great movie or even a decent movie. I'm just saying that... I can kind of see making something out of this.
I just can't with Tetris. As a film, yeah.
Yeah, I get that. What I was going to say is that I didn't have faith in it, but then they announced the casting, and I lost complete faith in it. Because in theory, you think getting big Hollywood names would mean a good thing, but usually in animation, it means that you're trying to bury your product by having name brands. It's like back in 2000 when you'd have something like Shark Tale with Will Smith. Or even, I guess, even the Shrek movies, like Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy.
Because you know the Foo Fight movie I mentioned, right?
Yeah.
And how it's really bad. Where is it? The cast of Foo Fight, right, is Charlie Sheen, Wayne Brady, Hilary Duff, Eva Longoria, Larry Miller, and Christopher Lloyd. So it actually plays into what you're just saying, you know?
Yeah, you get these big names, and it's like at that point you're not using the brand, you're not using the animation to sell. You're using the star power, and that usually.
And the kids don't care about stars.
Well, I don't think they care as much. It's to get the adults in there. Oh man, it's that new Will Smith movie. I always like him with something like that. Or in this case, I mean, even then, this is a very targeted audience because this is basically the SNL knockoff. It's Jason Sudeikis, Josh Gad, Maya Rudolph, Peter Dinklage, which, except for Peter Dinklage, are all kind of veterans of SNL. So it's like, these are comedy actors who have a brand to them. People know them, but they're not super famous. So it's like,
we want to get them on SNL to talk about the film.
Yeah, we'll get them. They're faces that people are going to talk to, and we're going to have publicity. I don't necessarily know what Angry Bird will be in come summer of 2016. I also don't know what state movies are going to be in the summer of 2016 by then, because by that point in the year, we're going to have, Batman vs. Superman, Captain America, we're going to have a bunch of major, major movies, where I don't think something like Angry Birds is going to resonate with a lot of people, because it's not like it's old enough to have nostalgia, and the audience isn't old enough to have nostalgia
for it. Well, not only that, it's the kind of... like product that Angry Birds is, it's basically a free mobile game, and people just toss them away, like when they're done, and they never think about them ever again. And
yeah, well, I mean,
it's Angry Birds.
And on top of that, isn't Angry Birds like in decline? I remember reading something about that.
I mean, their revenue's in decline. I don't know.
Yeah. And they fired 165 people from Rovio this week.
Maybe it's because everybody's bought the game and they've hit saturation point. Maybe the brand's still strong. People just aren't buying new stuff. But, yeah, the point is, in a year and a half, this brand may not be... Okay, I'm going to say this brand won't be as strong as it is now. And even now, I think it's on a decline. So it's going to be really curious to see what comes of it. Because as far as I know, I don't know if any of the other Angry Birds properties do that well. Because there's an Angry Birds comic book and there's an Angry Birds... not cartoon series, they do big minis, and I hear nothing about them, so I don't know.
Actually, that's a good point that you bring up with the branding and Tetris, because I think Tetris is more like a concept than it is a brand. You know, I know it is a brand, but people don't see it that way. I know Tetris, it's that music that plays, and that game that, you know, that I really like. I mean, I know somebody, I live with somebody who, she doesn't really play games, but she loves Tetris, you know? And to her, Tetris is not a series. It's just like just a game design, you know?
Yeah, I think Tetris is a, and I think it's hard, I want to say it's like Uno cards, like you know Uno,
yeah.
But you don't have like any fondness for Uno, you just know, like, oh, I enjoy playing Uno, but you don't think anything of the cards beyond playing it, and the same thing with Tetris, you don't think like, oh, who makes Tetris? Like what defines Tetris? There's, like, it's the pieces that you put in place and they clear out, but that's not a definition, that's a goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have any faith in that. And finally, because why not, the Dead Rising film, which I think they've been working on and off again for a while, has been announced for a digital release, I believe, by Legendary Digital Media.
So it's not going to succeed?
Oh, I never had any faith. Because the problem with Dead Rising is that it was basically Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, and not only that, is the whole franchise is release title fodder, isn't it? Basically. Because Dead Rising 2, I mean, they had to release Dead Rising 2 again because people liked the whole Frank West thing more than the character they replaced him with. And
Dead Rising 3 only exists because Microsoft invested in it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that game would not have been made.
Exactly.
Well, here's the funny thing about that, is that Dead Rising is a franchise that's really associated with Microsoft, because Dead Rising 1 was an early launch title for the Xbox 360, and Dead Rising 3 is an Xbox One exclusive. It's on PC as well, but you know what I'm saying. So it makes sense that the Dead Rising movie is going to be released through Sony's streaming service.
Sure. What?
It's being released through Crackle, which I guess is Sony's streaming service.
Yeah. Don't want that film to succeed. Microsoft is a fucking film studio.
Is this a film? I thought it was a series.
No, it looks like it's a 90-minute film.
Okay.
Maybe it's
so
a film.
So a 90-minute digital-only streaming film.
Hang on. This doesn't make any sense, really, because there was a Dead Rising film. If you remember when Dead Rising 2 was coming out, Inafune made his own little film to go with it, and I thought that was cool because it had all the sort of the charm of a Japanese B movie, because that's what it was. And
don't expect anything like that from this film.
And this is the thing, is this film is not going to be anything like, it's not going to have any charm to it.
Well, it's got to be interesting, because they also announced the cast. It's Jesse Metcalf from John Tucker Must Die, Desperate Housewives, Megan O'Rourke from Once Upon a Time, Virginia Madsen from Sideways, the number 23. I'm really disappointed in him, but Dennis Hasbert from 24, President Palmer, and Keegan-Connor Tracy from Once Upon a Time. Okay, there's two actors from Once Upon a Time. I've seen that show. I enjoy that show. It's not well known for its acting.
So it's a bunch of, like, B-list, C-list
It's a
TV
bunch of TV actors, yeah.
Yeah.
And not even good ones.
Yeah, it's like, you can literally tell this has no budget.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. It's a streaming thing. It's not even a direct-to-video thing. What will the budget be like? And if you remember what shit is going down in Dead Rising, I don't see that with, like, a shoestring budget.
And
it's going to make the Dead Rising Wii game.
It really confuses me.
Hold on, just real quick, because this is the thing that really kind of set me off as to never wanting to watch this again. The director of this is the dude who directed Leprechaun's Origins.
That gem.
And
what is that at? Is Rotten Tomatoes at like 3% or something?
If it's that high. I've personally seen it because you know me in horrible movies.
Oh, yeah.
And it is like, it's bad. It's one of those films that you kind of watch and completely forget about right away. It's also one of those films that, you know, kind of talking about Dead Rising. Dead Rising was known more for its sense of humor and its over-the-topness. Leprechaun was as well, and Leprechaun Origins has no sense of irony, no sense of humor about itself. It tries to be a seriously dark horror film, and that's not where Leprechaun needs to be.
And he directed a film called What Time Upon a Once. Funny that.
Yeah, I guess he...
Funny that.
Oh, yeah, and the only other thing he's done are TV movies.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, Dead Rising's not about... Dead Rising's about being kind of silly, and it's about your experience and sort of the stress of the time management and stuff. I can't see how this is going to work as a film. I don't...
Also, on top of that, Dead Rising was, except for some of the humor stuff, highly derivative.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly this will bring to the table.
And like I've said before, with Inafune's film, like, I can only see this working as a B-movie, and it won't be.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a B-movie, but even then you have to... Like, it's not... Like, you don't say, oh, it's going to be a B-movie, because you can have horrible B-movies, which makes it even worse. because those are just torture to go through, because they have none of the production values that you expect from these terrible blockbuster films. And, you know, just... We've had this discussion before. We had it, I think, last month when Heavenly Sword and Tekken 2 came out. And we're going to have it again. I said this on Twitter as well. Is that video game movies are in that same state comic book movies were in between Batman and Robin and really the first Spider-Man film. And that people are going to try to make them because...
They can.
They're a brand, they're a property, and you want to mind them. But nobody's going to take it seriously until you get a film that really kind of breaks out and goes away with the box office. And... Honestly speaking, I know one of the reasons that it's been really tough has been Prince of Persia, because Disney poured a ton of money into that film. It had a great cast. It had a huge budget. They wanted to make it their next, They wanted to make it the next Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And the film didn't do terrible, but it didn't do fantastic. It was made on like a $200 million budget and made $336 million, which isn't anything to scoff at, but when you see how much, like, there's not a huge window of making money there. So, there's a reason why almost every other video game movie made is either a horror or fighting game. It's because these are really cheap genres to make, and until something comes out that, you know, Resident Evil is the most successful video game movie franchise. And
unfortunately.
Well, I mean, yeah, again, horror movies are cheap to produce and they can make decent money. So that's why you got stuff like Silent Hill. It's why you got Doom. It's why you got House of the Dead. It's why you got Blood Rain. It's like, oh, we'll keep on harvesting these cheap horror franchises and maybe something.
Well, I would argue that all of the other Uwe Boll video game movies are also horror films because of how fucking bad they are, but you know.
But yeah. So, you know, like, I think the next possible one that has a chance is Assassin's Creed, and I kind of also bit of confidence in that when they been. Is it Sony? No, it's who's doing Assassin's Creed. Anyhow, whoever's doing Assassin's Creed moved it out of 2015 entirely. So right now, Assassin's Creed has no release date, which means they probably haven't started making it again. And what happens is directors get busy, actors get busy, and then it goes on the back burner. So, we shall see.
Also, I can see that Ubisoft making it the most mediocre film ever made because they make the most mediocre games.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be... You would hope it wouldn't be Ubisoft directly involved with it, even though that's a catch-22, because you do want the companies who make it to be involved so they can kind of say, okay, that's going to be stupid, take it out.
In this case, it means getting Ubisoft involved.
And the other one that I think might have potential, and I heard good things coming out of San Diego, is Warcraft. If I'm not mistaken, I think Warcraft is CG.
Yeah,
no.
If Warcraft is CG... That means
I don't think that's CG.
Okay. Just normal film. Okay. So, that has potential. Other than that, a lot of the other ones just seem to be like, we'll take up a lot of these franchises and see what happens. Like I said, it's going to be a long, hard road. And hopefully people start picking better things than Tetris. So yes, that has been your monthly video game movie update. Hopefully nothing comes anytime soon. Well, I mean, as far like Hitman Agent 47 is out in February, I believe. Other than that, we had some actual game news. Not a ton, nothing too major. This was kind of sad in its own way. but D4 and Xbox One indie exclusive. The developer basically went on Twitter to beg people to buy his game because it's been selling poorly.
This makes me really sad because I want to play D4. It looks really fucking good because Swery is the kind of guy that he's just fucking crazy, and I like his kind of crazy. And I would play this game on instant, but I'm not buying an Xbox One. I'm sorry.
Well, and I think he came out and said it's going to be exclusive. Like, it's not going to be ported over to PS4 or anything like that. And I think the biggest problem with that is, one, it kind of sucks for him. And the fact that he's begging people, not, you know, but he's telling people to buy his game. But the other thing is, Microsoft put no marketing effort behind it.
Until today, they released a trailer like today or something. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, it's not even like, they didn't give a release date. It was one of those things that, oh yeah, it's coming out Friday. And that was kind of...
They said that on the Thursday, though. Oh yeah, it's coming out tomorrow. What?
No, I heard it on, I think it was on 84PA Podcast, where they were like, yeah, they were talking to him at, like, PAX, and he's like, oh yeah, my game's coming out this week. And that was how it was an interview at PAX, and that's how the release date was found out. And the other thing, and I heard this on, I think, Player One Podcast, was they were basically saying, like, I don't know how this helps Microsoft's case with indie developers if the games you're actually publishing you don't market.
Yeah.
Like, when Sony's doing a bang-up job, just like, oh, indie games, indie games, indie games, indie games, indie games, and you're like, oh, we have this major one that's from a relatively well-known developer because people love, what is that game he made?
Deadly Premonition.
Yeah, Deadly Premonition. And you put it out there with no marketing, you don't release release date or anything like that, and it sells just in 10,000, and you're not doing anything to promote it. What does that tell any developers who may want to support your system?
Yeah. Especially when you have all the hang-ups with the parity clauses that indie developers don't like already, you know? Here's what I don't understand is, like, why pay for the game to get made if you're not going to promote it anyway? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like, what was the purpose of...
Because Swery could have gone to Kickstarter, and I would have paid for it, and then I would have got a copy on PC. You know?
Yeah, also, remember how much of a big deal they made out of it when it was initially announced?
Yeah, and then when it comes out, they just don't care anymore. It's ridiculous. And it's not like there isn't an audience for Swery stuff either, because, you know, Deadly Premonition initially came out on the 360 alone, and then it was end up being a cult hit to the point where it got a PS3 and a PC port. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what to say. The monkey won't do. But yeah, there's that. I guess, like, when Xbox One, it sold 100,000 in its first day in China, is it?
At least it's selling somewhere.
Is
it selling in Japan?
It's more, I think, like, an interesting number. It's actually, if you think about how big China is, that's not a big deal.
It's not a big, I think if you take proportions of how video games sell to their population, because even, like, last gen, we had, 200 million systems sold worldwide between a population of several billion?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks bad if you take it that way in anything.
And it's more interesting in the sense, like, this is kind of basically the first time China has gotten, like, a current system officially released.
That wasn't made by Nintendo.
Yeah. Even the Nintendo stuff that always came later to China. Like,
well,
when we had the GameCube, they basically just got the N64.
And I think with China, it's going to be a long, long... It's going to ramp up over time because, obviously, people are just going to find out. Because China hasn't been able to buy consoles traditionally until now, they've all been playing games on PC. So, I think it will take some time for anybody to see any major success in China. But I think 100K is a decent number.
China, definitely.
Given the situation that, you know, it's an expensive machine in a country that hasn't typically seen machines like this before. So, yeah, I think it's a decent start.
Also, thing about console is not the same as PC. Always have to remember that. It's like, it's more like a living room machine, stuff like that.
Not only that, you pay for your games up front on console, whereas in China, a lot of the games are free to play.
And so for China, this console thing is more something for their new middle class and up. So this is basically for the people that got money now, and that's not most of the population in China, let's say it this way. And but it's a start, and I could definitely see if the further China develops and this middle class gets bigger, then consoles might also get a bigger deal in China overall.
Yeah, and it's a new market. It's always interesting. Maybe we'll see more Chinese developed games on console releases.
That would be interesting, yeah.
It's curious, and like you said, it's some case that Microsoft has a leg up on Sony. even if it's not technically no competition, they can count it.
Also, pretty sure Sony is bringing out a PS4 there early next year.
Well, there you go. No more numbered Assassin's Creed games.
Didn't they just give up with the numbering when it came to releasing 3 Assassin's Creed 2 games? Anyway.
I was about to say, they gave up with the number when they released 2 games this year, but...
I don't think it's interesting that this is a deal, big deal in the first place. I mean, it makes sense. The further down you get the series, you don't want to have, like, Assassin's Creed 17 or something, you always want new people to pick up your game, and when they see a number like that, that's probably detrimental. And most publishers have caught on to that quite early, to be honest.
It's interesting how many people I still have to explain to that all the Final Fantasies, the numbered Final Fantasies, they're not related to each other.
Yeah.
So, it's a good idea if they want to keep milking the franchise.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think Final Fantasy was an interesting...
a long time ago.
I think Final Fantasy is an interesting counterpoint in the sense that I think Final Fantasy has kind of become like the Super Bowl. I think partially because they use Roman numerals. It's always kind of been romanticized. Like, nobody thinks, oh man, up to 15 now. It's like, oh, Final Fantasy 15, because you know that means it's an actual core Final Fantasy. When you think of like Final Fantasy Tactics or Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, it's like, oh, those don't count. But when you get to the numbered one, that means something. I guess it also means that the Final Fantasy brand stretched too thin when you need to know that this is the core brand and these are the spinoffs and the side things or whatever. But yeah, in theory, most people tend to avoid numbering after 5 because, one, it just looks bad. Two, it becomes a burden of a barrier of entry for a lot of people. It's like, oh, you're up to 15? Like, do I have to play the first 14 games? It's why I always found it weird that Nintendo went back to, well, not went back, but went to numbering for Mario Kart.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because it's like, Mario Kart 7, where did that come from? so that's not a big deal. And again, it was kind of known, because I think actually they didn't name it, technically it was numbered, but it was basically referred to by its name, and I guess again, it makes it easier for them to release multiple versions in a year.
Well, we're already getting to Assassin's Creed games that are different on the same day this year.
So it's easier for them to say, because like, what, you're gonna name 1.5 and 1.6, or it gets really weird. Tekken 7 location test. I guess this is more just for an FYI. If you want to watch, it's going to be live streamed on October 7th.
Yeah.
Which is... October 7th when? Because is that...
In Japan.
So I don't know if that's like October 6th for us, or...
Yeah, also we don't know how long the stream will be. I'm not sure. But it will be streamed on Nico Nico, which is kind of a pain to set up.
Not only is it a pain to set up, it's a pain to stay in if you don't pay them.
Yeah, but I'm sure someone will just restream it on Twitch or something, as people usually do. I just thought it was interesting. I mean, seeing Tekken 7 actually in action could be cool.
Yeah, it's something different. It kind of shows confidence in your product, especially being that this is really a test. But, you know, to have the world, or at least part of the world, watch it, it shows confidence.
Yep.
And I guess we'll end on Destiny, because we can't go a week without talking about it. New patch. What does this new patch do, Martin?
I just threw it in because that's an important thing that a lot of people have been complaining about. This is basically the patch that fixes major parts of the loot system, in that previously when you got like a legendary engram and then went to a cryptarch to decrypt it, the problem is it could be something worse than legendary. And legendary drops were already so far and few between that it was a real pain that most of these things turned out to be just rares, and you really need those legendaries to level up beyond level 20. And this changes that. That legendary engrams are always legendary items or better. Rare engrams are always rare items or better. Also, special events like strikes and weekly missions and stuff like that now always have like better payouts with items than before, which also didn't happen. You could do go through like a weekly mission and get jack shit, and that's now also no longer happening. So this was kind of a big deal. There are still some problems with how loot works, but this helps a lot, I have to say.
Okay, have you been playing it any? Or
yeah.
Have you been...
I actually played and finished the raid this week for the first time, which was really fucking cool. It's probably best content the whole game has. And it's a shame that it doesn't have matchmaking, in my opinion, because it's really hard to get six people together.
And for 10-hour content as well.
Well, it's not really 10
is
hours.
Is it not? Oh.
No.
But I've heard it,
but
yeah, I've heard it's been shrunk down.
That
yeah,
was
first
the
group.
First group that had to figure everything out. If you know what you're doing, you can do it in like an hour or two.
Oh, right, okay.
It took us 3 hours, but that mostly was because we died a lot at the final boss. We had some issues there, but we got it done in the end. So I would say like 2-3 hours tops usually if you know what you're doing. And at this point, you can just read up how all the mechanics in the raid work and stuff, because the game doesn't explain them to you. Mm. So, yeah.
A thing that Destiny doesn't explain to you very well. Shock horror.
There's also that, I don't know what the Destiny revealed, I guess I'm going to call it. There's like a document going around where people are trying to break down like exactly what happened in the development of Destiny.
Oh, God, I hate that.
We're not going to talk about it. I'm just saying it's out there if you want to read it. Just really quickly, maybe we'll do this more often, maybe we won't. Just kind of run down what's coming out this week, and maybe if we're, just real quick, Sky and his trap team is actually out, I guess by the time you hear this, which would be Monday, would be out the day before.
Maybe it'll actually be better than Disney Infinity.
I wanted to bring up Sky and his for that reason. I was watching the Giant Bomb quick look of Disney Infinity 2.0, and I understand why. It was last year, but now it's just really weird from a franchise standpoint that Marvel characters don't cross over with Marvel characters. Like,
yep.
It's the Avengers.
Some of them can. If you, like, collect specific coins, and then you can put Iron Man into your Guardians of the Galaxy playset.
Oh my gosh. Skylander and Disney Infinity exist to make money. I mean,
by the way, I know why they're doing it, because hey, you want to play a story with Rocket Raccoon? Better buy that Guardians of the Galaxy playset, buddy.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It feels so much more cynical than Skylander does, because it's like, even if you get these toys, you can't unlock everything in this game, because
nope.
I was watching, I think they played the Spider-Man, and I think Spider-Man is basically the Ultimate Spider-Man crew. It's White Tiger, it's Iron Fist, it's Power Man, it's, and I think there's like one or two others, and then it's like, oh, but you can't bring in, I'm like, wait, why doesn't Iron Man exist in Spider-Man's world now? I'm like, actually, it kind of makes sense. I can understand why you had Jack Sparrow and then you had the Incredibles. They don't inhabit the same space in the actual movies. But Marvel exists as one giant Marvel universe. So I don't get why, like, oh, we're in New York, but the Avengers part of New York. Now we're in the Spider-Man part of New York. Here's the X-Men part of New York. And it's, like, really strange. But, yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. Also out this week, Alien Isolation, which has been getting mixed reviews.
Yeah.
The score range and opinions on that game is crazy. Yeah. There's some stuff, though, that I can, in the bad reviews, that I can totally understand. When I hear, like, this is kind of Amnesia-ish, and it doesn't bring up anything new beyond, like, the first 5 hours of playtime, but this game actually takes 20 hours to get through, I can see how that someone might think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, it also sounds like the alien disappears, like, the middle portion of the game.
Yeah, and then you fight androids or something.
Yeah, and they said that, and I understand why, because it's a video game, but they do say at some point it kind of becomes broken when you become so overpowered that nothing's a threat and nothing's frightening.
Mm.
Which I can understand, but it's like somebody else pointed out, and this is somewhat true, not entirely true. Like, all the negative reviews seem to be coming from the big sites, and all the positive reviews, or the super positive ones, are coming from more, like, tiny sites. Not necessarily, like, fan sites, but yes, you know, yes, your IGNs and your GameSpots, and more of, like, your, I don't know, Push Starts, and, you know, GameBlog.fr or whatever, stuff like that.
Well, I'm pretty sure it had, like, good one from Eurogamer, if I'm not mistaken. Eurogamer's not small.
No, but most of them, I mean, IGN, GameSpot, GameTrailer, they all kind of, I think Game Informer all had them in, like, the, yeah. I think one, IGN had it in the 5, some of them had it in the 6s, and then, like, the 9s and 10s and stuff were bigger sites. Like, even Eurogamer, I think, was an 8.
Yeah, but it wasn't an 8, yeah.
Yeah, and just to say, I actually think this is a good thing, because I think Destiny and Hybrid Warriors are in the same range, and I actually think this is the range we need to get people accustomed to, because being in the mid to high 7s is actually a good thing. It means you're a good game, you're just nothing special, and that should be the bulk of your product releases.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good thing. So hopefully we're getting to a point where we can standardize more reviews where we have, like, these are your mid-tier games and these are your big must-have titles, and that everything's a 9 and above. That's just weird.
I mean, the sort of 7 number is the kind of, if you really like this kind of game, buy it. But if you don't, then, like, if you want something that's actually, like, new or, like, not derivative, then go get something else.
Well, but for me, though, I like this kind of game, but after I heard, like, hey, this is 20 hours, I'm like, yeah, no. Because I don't think any game can hold this kind of gameplay for 20 hours.
Yeah,
and that might be just me, because apparently some people really loved it, but I don't think that's a great thing. I would agree with some people who have said, maybe if this would have been a downloadable thing for, I don't know, 30 to 40 bucks and just 5 to 6 hours. Maybe that would have been a better game.
And then people would have complained it's too short. It's a no.
Yeah, but it would have been cheaper.
Yeah, it would have, but I will say this much. At least they're confident enough, because I don't remember Alien Colonial Marines, but I'm fairly certain that had no reviews before launch. But they're confident enough.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right.
They're confident enough that they actually reviews up the weekend before it comes out.
I think
so.
It's a case of this time they had to let reviews out before.
Oh, they had to, but it's nice, you know, they could have had the embargo end like Monday night. Also out this week, Costume Quest 2, Drive Club, finally, oh yeah, yeah, later. NBA 2K15. Is Project Spark in open beta now, or I forget what's going on with that.
Does anyone care about that?
No idea.
Microsoft does. But, it's a decent, nothing super special week, but it's a, I mean, I say that, but Alien Isolation, I think, would have been the big game this week, and it's not bad, it's just so-so. And if you really want to torture yourself, Final Fantasy 13 is coming out on PC this week as well. So, yeah, I mean, nothing major. I might check out Costume Quest 2. I think I will have to, because I want to do something for Halloween. As far as, like, game coverage goes. But, Other than that, do you folks have anything before you wrap?
Not really.
Nah.
Okay. Show for Martin, Daniel, and this guy, Earl. This has been Duo Woden, episode 156. We'll catch you next week.